Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you live every Thursday, and we talk about the world of business. We always have great guests, and we have guests who discuss topics according to their expertise, and it has ranged from leadership to finance to managing your money, and even we've dealt with health issues. And tonight's going to be exceptionally special, and this is someone that I know personally, grew up with. But before we get to our guest, I'd like to introduce my co-host, because I never take this journey alone. Lori, let them know you are here.
Hi, Lori Miller of LGC Interior Design, and super happy to be back on a regular schedule and talking to everyone Thursday night. I want to say thank you to our listeners. We have hit 1,000 listeners, and we started during COVID, so I guess you guys had nothing to do. Just kidding. I want to say thank you, Scott, Relevate Health Group. I'm going to let you tell us more about your company and what you do, but you know, Ted and I both greatly appreciate your being our guest, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, Lori.
Thank you, us too. So tell us a little bit about Relevate Health Group, and I guess my first question is, how did you come up with that name?
So I used to work at Procter & Gamble, and we spent a lot of time on marketing and coming up with names. And when my partner and I started the company, we had both worked at Procter & Gamble, both worked at Pfizer, and we were thinking about names. And we're like, unlike when you work on a hair care brand like Pantene, you're going to spend $100 million to create a brand and create a name. We said, hey, we need a very simple name. So when we started the company, it was Healthcare Regional Marketing, because we were going to do regional marketing for healthcare companies. You know, it was really only pharmaceutical, but we said maybe one day we'll be healthcare. Healthcare regional marketing, be extremely overt. And then fast forward 7-8 years, we bought another company, Spirit Health Group, and we're going to merge them into us. And we're like, okay, we need a new name. So then we actually spent a lot more time thinking about, okay, what is a name that represents what we are? And what we try to do is make healthcare communications more relevant. So we went with Relevate, you know, kind of a play on relevant. So that's how we came up with Relevate.
Interesting. When I was doing the write-up and I was reading it, I kept reading relevant. And I'm like, it's not. I'm like, they elevate health group communication. I'm like, but is it relevant? And do they elevate it to make it relevant? And I'm like, oh, maybe that's how they got the name, was they put it together.
So, that's exactly how we got it, yes.
That's really cool.
And,
go ahead, Ted, I interrupted you.
Say that again, Ted.
What year was that you started?
So in 2007 is when we started the company, you know, that was called Healthcare Regional Marketing. And probably 2015, 8 years later is when we bought Spirit, and then Spirit Health Group. And then in 2016 is when we really merged the two and changed the name. So been in business 13 years, and it's been a ton of fun.
Okay. And started off with $0, and where did you top out at in revenue?
So it was really interesting. So, you know, it's been 13 years. You're right. We started at $0, which all startups start at zero. Last year, we were $18 million. We went from 2 employees to like 85 employees. So, you know, lots of growth. But what was most interesting is we started off the first year, 2007. We did $400,000 in revenue. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable. We're doing so great. And then at the end of the year, my partner was the CFO role also. And I'm like, hey, how much money's left for profit after that $400,000? He's like, nothing. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And we took zero salary that year. So we each put in $5,000. you know, zero salary, which is worth something because, you know, we could have had jobs. The next year, we went from 400,000 to 4 million. And I'm expecting at the end of that year, you know, to get an enormous check. How much money's left? Nothing again. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
You know, we started hiring a lot of people. But then finally, by year three, we did $8 million in revenue. And by then, there was money left at the end of the profit. So it took 3 years to become profitable.
You broke up, Scott. At the end of 3 years, $8 million, and what was the profit?
You know, a company like ours, most companies are about 30, 35% profit margin, and we're right in line with that. It varies year to year.
Okay. All right. Good. But that must have been, as an entrepreneur, you know, you put money in, your blood, sweat, and tears, you know, that sweat equity, and find out at the end of, like, wow, we've generated a lot of revenue and no salary, and you're expecting some sort of bonus or profit, and it was zero. Like, that must have been like a gut punch.
Well, the 400 grand wasn't, because, you know, I knew we had some expenses and we had hired a few people. And the 4 million, actually, there would have been profit, but what happened is we got some checks towards the end of the year. And at the time, the way our accounting systems works, we didn't really cash the checks till January of the next year. So we probably could have had profit the second year, but instead we decided to have more the third year. And by the second year, we took zero salary the first year. The second year, we took about half of what our salary was at Pfizer. So, you know, we both had enough money coming in to pay our bills. And, you know, I saw a light at the end of the tunnel. By then I knew, hey, we're on the path to some success here.
Well, of course, right? And did you take on any partners at all at any point?
So after like 3 years, we had 20 employees. Prior to that, you know, my partner's name is Jeff. Jeff and I hadn't really managed people. I had managed two people, I think was the most ever. He managed one people, and now we have 20. And it's interesting, these 20 employees are asking extremely basic questions like, hey, are we going to ever get healthcare benefits? We are a healthcare company, by the way. Hey, can we talk about raises? Are you going to give me a performance review? Like super basic stuff. And we realized, hey, I'm a very good marketer. I'm a very good pharmaceutical marketer. I'm not necessarily a good general manager. And like, so, you know, we're talking, it's like, hey, yeah, we need to give benefits. And I'm like, yeah, you should work on that. He's like, no, I think you'd be really good. You should work on that. So neither of us wanted to do it because we both wanted to get in front of clients as much as possible. So that's when we took on a partner. And it's interesting because randomly we get a phone call. Someone says, hey, I want to buy your company. So my partner calls me and says, hey, you're not going to believe this. Someone sent me a letter. They want to buy the company. It was a terrible day at work. And I'm like, you know what? If we could find someone dumb enough to buy this thing, let's sell it. So he comes in. He does a whole due diligence, financial audits. We sign all these NDAs. And then he's going to give us a presentation. So I remember the presentation. He pulls up his PowerPoint. And I see in the corner, it says like slide 1 of 30. I'm like, just jump to slide 30. I need to see the price. He's like, no. He walks us through it. And at the end, he says, hey, your company's not worth anything. Every single decision in the company runs through you two guys. Every client only knows you two guys. If I buy the company and you leave, it's worth nothing. So that was, you know, sobering. You know, he was right, but it was still, no, you don't want to hear that. So we're like, well, at zero, we're not selling, you know, get out of here. And then he also told us things like, oh, by the way, when I was going through your books, I noticed, you know, Pfizer owes you $200,000. You forgot to send them an invoice. You know, Johnson & Johnson owes you $150,000. You forgot to send them an invoice. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, the sticky notes on the side of our computer isn't the best system for invoicing. So we start calling this guy for coaching on, hey, you know, what kind of billing system would you buy? And next thing you know, we're starting to call him so frequently with questions. He's like, you should just hire me. No, he says, I'm going to start charging you for this. And I'm like, I'd love to pay you, but my company, I really don't have money. So anyway, so we decide, hey, we're going to hire him for a one-year test. You know, he'll be the general manager, chief operating officer. I forget his exact title. And if we like you and you like us, at the end of the year, we'll let you buy up to a third of the company. So he works for a year, works out great. He buys 20% of the company. We make him CEO. And he was, you know, 55 years old at the time. He was a C-level person at his last company, much bigger, a $1 billion company. He's going to lead the company, and he's going to teach us how to run it one day because, you know, at, you know, he's 10, 15 years older. He's going to retire, and, you know, we're going to have to run this thing. So we took him on in maybe 2011 or so. And then when we bought the hospital marketing company, it came with a president who became also a partner. So then we had four of us, and that didn't work out so well because now you got too many cooks, and it just takes long to make a decision. And, you know, one person says, I think we should make it beige. Another person says, I like tan. Another person says, taupe is best. I'm like, you guys are killing me. Like, who cares? Like, they're all the same. You know, I'm colorblind. You guys are arguing over this. So then we buy those two guys out, which, you know, talk about, you know, sobering. Like, you know, it's multi-million dollar loan to buy these guys out. You know, I started the company on $5,000. Now we're taking out, you know, $1 million loans. But once they left, we were just so much faster. You know, we started growing 20% a year every single year. And, you know, they added value. But the fact that we were making decisions, and even if they were only, you know, 90% right, we were making them versus arguing to try to get a 90% decision to, you know, 99% accurate. And so, yeah, we had some partners, still have a partner today. You know, it was good. And then at times it was just a little clunky.
Okay. All right. Hey, Lori,
it's like a marriage, right?
A lot of questions. Just before we get to that, Scott, you and I know one another from a maybe a past life is not the right way to say it, but we went to high school together.
Yes, we did.
And Lori, we actually went to a high school that had a lot of really smart people in it. I think they were just handing out intelligence, and I was probably somewhere making trouble. And as you see, Scott jumped in line to get his share of it. So Scott was pretty popular in high school.
I'm not sure if that helped with the business so much, but we did go to high school. I mean, it's kind of a small world. And then I guess Cory Booker was speaking at another one of our high school friends' houses. He invited both Ted and I to there. And I was like, oh, my gosh, haven't seen you in 20 years. You know, get a hug the whole bit. So, small world, isn't it?
Right. That was the last time I had seen you. The fundraiser at Larry's home. So, absolutely. So you worked at P&G, and you said it didn't totally prepare you for being an entrepreneur.
For the real world.
You had great marketing and branding experience, but no real operations experience.
Yeah.
No leadership.
Right. So, you know, I went to high school with Teddy, you know, went to college. Then I worked at Procter & Gamble and did that for a lot of years. Then I went to Pfizer, and someone once said to me, hey, this is a really great place to learn how to run a business. It might not be a great place to actually run a business because you have so much coaching because there's five levels above you at all times that you really don't get to try things, but you learn a lot. And they're extremely focused. So, you know, I was in marketing. They called it brand management. You know, you do get into P&L. So, I knew that part of the business, but nothing on operations. You know, I told you I only managed two people at the most. So, you know, you can't really say a lot of leadership experience. And, you know, if I think about function by function, much more no experience in a function than have experience. Now, the good thing about brand management and marketing is you do learn a little bit about each function, but in general, you're a specialist. And when we started the company, I'd say clients really liked us because we were really good at a very narrow niche. I remember on one of our first sales calls, the guy's like, you know, he asked me, well, you know, here's our problem. You know, how would you maybe solve it? And I said, well, you know, I would do A, B, and C. He's like, yeah, I should probably just hire you to do this project because then you could tell me how to do my job. And I'm like, well, maybe. And, you know, I had written a book about pharmaceutical marketing. You know, I'm teaching at Rutgers. So, you know, I came in with a lot of credibility about, oh, this guy's pretty good at this one thing. And you know, I was, and so was my partner. But then when you're running a company, you have to be, you know, pretty good at a whole bunch of things as opposed to good at one, which is why we took on that general manager.
So, and Lori, I'm going to be quiet after this question. But Scott, so for anyone listening,
Scott
who works
is lying.
In a large
he never
team,
knows how to keep quiet.
So, for anyone working in a, let's say they are, you know, over 25 and they work for a Fortune 500 company the way you work, and they have this entrepreneurial bug, how can they take advantage? Like, what are the resources they could exploit in a corporation? Like, when you look back now, what are some of the things you could have done differently that would have better prepared you for being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so when, for me at least, when I worked at, you know, mostly Procter & Gamble, but then also at Pfizer, I mean, I started Procter & Gamble, so I was younger. So all I cared about was getting the next promotion. And I remember my first promotion at Procter & Gamble, or the second one. The first one, it's basically in a year you get promoted or you get fired. So you're kind of on probation. But then the next one happens 3 years to 4 years after you start. And I wanted to get promoted in 36 months. You know, I thought 37 months meant failure. And it took 39 months. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. But I was so focused on getting promoted, so focused on being, you know, good at one thing. And I did that for, you know, 15, 20 years. I probably would have been better off switching to other functions to get more general experience, you know, be, you know, 80% good at marketing and 80% good at finance and 80% good at operations versus, you know, trying to be 110% the best person at marketing. So that would be, as I look back, I wish I took advantage of the breadth that was available when I worked at those Fortune 500 companies.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. Great advice. Thanks. Lori, I'm in silent mode.
So I guess, you know, as you were talking, there were a few things that kind of came to my mind, and it's refreshing to hear someone who's running, you know, a multi-million-dollar company that has no idea how much money is coming in, how much money is owed to them, and isn't making a profit. Because that's, you know, as a designer and a creative, that's one of the things that, you know, never mind myself, but most of us struggle with, because it's such a different part of the brain, and it's just so, it's such a specific set of systems, and if you don't follow the process, you just kind of never know. So it's good to hear that you weren't focused on that and you were focused just on really making the business work and run. And then you were like, oh, okay.
Yeah, we, I'd say, you know, my belief has always been, I don't know where I picked this up, is like revenue solves all problems, which is not true, but I believe that, hey, if I can get more and more revenue, so, you know, we had enough revenue. And then I also believe that, hey, if you take care of your customers, because we're a B2B, if you take care of the customers, everything's going to work out. So we were super focused on that. And we did know at the beginning, because some of the, I do remember we sold a program once and, you know, someone told me, hey, Scott, you should call this guy John over at Pfizer. And I'm like, oh, I know John. So I call him up. I go into his office. I'm like, hey, this is what we do. He's like, perfect. That's exactly what you need. We need. Will you come back and talk to me and my boss, Jim, and, you know, explain it to him? You know, I think we want to move forward and hire you. So I'm all excited. Come back 3 days later to meet with John and Jim. I get to the conference room. There's 20 people there. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I thought there was going to be two of them. And I, out of these 20, I know 7 or 8 of them. So I'm presenting, and they're drilling me with questions. And I'm like, guys, we were friends 3 weeks ago, a month ago. Why are you drilling me with questions?
Right.
So they're asking, like, so many super hard questions. And then finally they're like, okay, great, you know, we're going to debrief now and we'll let you know. And I'm like, hey, do you want me to just sit in the back of the room? That way, if you have a question during your debrief, I'm right there to answer it. And they're like, no, you got to leave. So as I'm leaving, one of my old manager is in the room. He's like, oh, stop by office. You know, I'm the cat. And the entire time I'm thinking, hey, when he comes back in a half hour, should I ask him how the debrief went? Is that appropriate or not? So this is like the moral dilemma going on in my head. So he comes back, and the second he walks in, he says, they're going to hire you. So I'm like, okay, I don't have to ask because he said it. So I do say, hey, what was the main part of the conversation? And he says, people said, can these guys really do a good job at such a cheap price? I told them it was going to be $125,000 to do this project, which to me was a ton of money. And so then I said, oh, really? What do you think the right price should have been? He said, about double. So I'm like, wow. So the next day we doubled our prices, and then we was like, okay, there should be plenty of money here to make profit. But that was a very lucky situation there that someone gave me that feedback, because otherwise we probably would have inched our pricing up. And when we doubled our price, our close rate and stuff like that did not change at all. So we were in the part that was still, you know, price inelastic.
So that happened in the first year, Scott?
I'd say, yeah, I would say first 4 months.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was
lucky,
our fourth project. Yes, extremely lucky. I mean, another lucky thing is, you know, I'm still an employee of Pfizer, and Jeff and I are thinking, hey, we're going to start our own company. And, you know, Ted, living in New Jersey, there's lots of pharmaceutical companies. So I just had neighbors and friends who worked at these pharma companies. So I'd call them up and say, hey, you know, Lori, I'm thinking of starting my own pharmaceutical company, you know, marketing company. Can I show you what I got? And over lunchtime, I'd go meet with all these people and show them what I had. And, you know, I was smart enough to, at the end, because, you know, I meet with somebody in operations, you know, IT, security, whatever. And I'd say, hey, Lori, can you do me a favor? I love your feedback. Can you introduce me to someone in the marketing department? Because I find I get better feedback from people in marketing and people I don't know. So it was definitely, you know, they told two friends who told two friends. So somebody tells me, you should call this one guy. So I give him a call, leave him a voicemail. Hey, I'm, you know, my friend was Lou. I'm friends with Lou. He said, and the guy's name is Seth Fisher. Hey, Seth, this is Scott Weintraub. Lou suggested I give you a call, start my own company. Can we meet? So his assistant calls me back. Hey, yeah, you know, he'd love to help you start your company. Come on in. So I get to his office, and it's at Johnson & Johnson. And, you know, you can imagine it's an enormous building. The assistant meets me at the lobby because, you know, the security desk and everything. We walk back, and we go up the elevator, down a hallway. All of a sudden, we turn down another hallway, and you can tell something's different. Instead of cubicles, it's mahogany wood walls, thick carpet.
Oh, wow.
Oil paintings of retired CEOs, the whole bit. So I get into Seth's office, and to get to Seth's office, you have to go through his assistant's office. And his assistant's office is, you know, 12 by 12. And she says, sit right here. I'll go see if he's ready. And I look on his on her desk. There's a business card, and it says Seth Fisher, Chairman, North American Pharmaceuticals. So
wow.
I later find out he has 21,000 people who report to him. So I'm like, wow.
Oh my God.
You know, exactly. I'm like, thank God I wore a jacket today. So luckily, I didn't have enough time to get nervous because otherwise I probably would have. We go in there and he says, any friend of Lou was a friend of mine. And he like bear, he gives me a bro hug, right? I've never met this guy. He's chairman of the company. He gives me a bro hug. We talk about Lou for 5 minutes. And he's like, I hear you're starting a company. Let me see what you got. This is this is prior to day one of the company. I'm still doing this during lunch hours, right? I open my laptop. I get 5 slides through. He's like, you know, this really isn't up my alley. Do you mind if I call my vice president of marketing? He'd have much better input than me on this. I'm like, sure, not a problem. So this guy's old school. You know, he yells to his assistant, Sally, get Bob. 3 minutes later, Bob walks in. And now Seth goes, Bob, this is my friend, Scott Weintraub. Scott, this is Bob Spurr. And I'm like, wow, he said friend. I just met the guy 15 minutes ago. So we say hello for 5 minutes. And then Seth says, hey, Scott, do you mind starting the presentation over? Sure, not a problem. So we start over, get through the same 5 slides. Bob says, Seth, this is exactly what we talked about yesterday at the board meeting. Where'd you find this guy? So Seth says, don't worry, I found him. So the two of them start talking for 10 minutes, like I'm not even in the room. Oh, we can do this, we can do this. So then finally Bob says, hey, Scott, why don't you and I go to my office, figure out next steps. This really isn't Seth's area. So I leave. Seth's like, hey, thanks a lot. He goes, hey, Scott, do me one favor. I'm like, sure. Don't tell Bob how we met. So I'm like, okay. As soon as we leave his office, Bob's like, so how'd you guys meet? I'm like, are you kidding me? So he goes, I'm only kidding. So, and I'm still an employee of Pfizer. You know, I'm on my lunch break here. And he's like, and my last day is, you know, March 31st. And it's like March 25th. So he's like, hey, can you come back, you know, and meet with these two people? You know, how's Thursday? I'm thinking, you know, I think I want to wait till I'm done working at Pfizer for this. It feels too real. So I'm like, how's next Monday, April 1st? Perfect. So Bob meets me in the lobby that day, walks me up to the room, and there's two, Catherine and Roger. And he says to me as we're walking up, he goes, hey, I can't stay for the meeting. I'm going to just kick it off, and then I'm leaving. So we get in there. He's like, Roger, Catherine, this is Scott. He's friends with Seth and me. We think what he has. I know. He thinks what we think what he has might help your brands. Do me a favor after the meeting. Send Seth and I an email letting us know if you're going to move forward. He leaves, and Roger says, I'm buying. Just tell me what you got. And then Catherine says, yeah, you started pretty high up in the food chain. And I'm like, oh, really? Is Seth a senior guy around here? And she goes, yeah, he's pretty senior. So I walk them through. We actually get past 5 slides. We get through the whole, you know, 15 slides. And they say, actually, hey, we actually do need this. Can you get us a proposal? And I'm smart enough to say, sure, when do you need it? And or they said, when can we get your proposal? So I'm smart enough to say, when do you need it? Because the truth is, I can go work on this right now because I have absolutely nothing to do.
Nothing to do.
I have absolutely nothing to do. But I didn't say it. I said, when do you need it? We need it by Friday. I said, not a problem. So I get out of the meeting. I call Jeff on my cell phone, and he's like, you know, staring at his phone waiting for the call. How'd it go? How'd it go? I said, went great. They want a proposal. He goes, I had a feeling it was going to go well. I just got back from Barnes & Noble. I bought a book on how to write proposals. So like, okay, we're off. So we put together proposals. You know, another dumb luck thing that happened is, you know, someone told me, hey, you shouldn't just mail these proposals. You should hand deliver it. So I call Roger up on, you know, Wednesday. Hey, the proposal's done. He's like, sure, just email it over. I said to him, our company policy is I have to actually hand deliver it. Now, remember, there's only two people at the company. We have no policies.
Right.
He's
right,
like, sure,
right.
Not a problem. You know, how's Thursday at 3 o'clock? I'm like, great. So then I call Catherine. I'm like, hey, I'm coming in Thursday at 3 to meet with Roger. Can I meet with you at either 2 or 4? 2 o'clock's perfect. So I go in there. I remember showing it to Catherine. You know, it's 2 pages. She reads it. Hey, this is perfect. She walks me over to purchasing person, says, hey, I forgot that person's name. We're going to hire these guys. Can you process the paperwork? I meet with Roger. He's like, hey, can you change this and this? And next thing you know, we had a meeting on Monday. Those two people hired us on Thursday of that week. Had another meeting on Tuesday of our first week. They wanted a proposal and Wednesday. So we got yes, yes, yes. Now, I tell everyone since then, I've got 500 people to say no. We're at least 500. But we got 3 yeses, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, which really kind of catapulted us to, hey, you know, we're going to be successful. So we had a lot of lucky breaks.
Wow, great, great story. Hold on, Scott. So if anyone would like to call in and ask Scott, and trust me, you can ask him your toughest questions because we're going to also get into how he went down the path of private equity. So the number to call in is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. Great story, Scott. Amazing story, actually. So, see, just like in high school, you were good at making friends. See, you said you didn't know how being popular worked out. So you were popular right out the gate.
Yeah, actually, you are right. Sometimes, this lady, Catherine, who worked at Johnson & Johnson, she's a brand director at the time. She later becomes president. So whenever I sell anything, and when I wrote my book, I interviewed her for the book. So whenever I'm talking to anyone at Johnson & Johnson, I'll typically say, oh, do you know Catherine Owens? They're like, of course I know Catherine Owens. I'm like, and I'll pull a copy of the book out of my briefcase. I'm like, hey, if you read, you know, chapter 6 in my book, she talks about how, you know, this regional marketing stuff worked for her old brand. And I'm just saying, if you want to be president, you might want to listen to what she said. So, I do remember one day, Catherine walked. I'm in the lobby waiting for my next meeting, and Johnson & Johnson owed us $200,000 for a project they had to get signed off. Catherine walks in, and I'm on the phone with my partner, Jeff, and, you know, I have the earbuds in my ear. So I sit in and say, hey, hold on. Catherine just walked in. I want to say hello. So I give Catherine a hug, and she's, like, talking in my ear, basically talking to my partner. Oh, how's it going? You know, haven't seen you in a while, et cetera. She walks right up to her office and signs off on our purchase order. So he says to me, hey, can you just hang out in the lobby all day long? You know, start hugging people, see if we can get checks.
So let me ask you, Scott. So those are, like, you know, great stories of how things, like, they just, like, this planets lined up for you. I mean, your first meeting is with a sales always, did they always just go up like that, or did you, were you experiencing any like ups and downs?
Oh yeah. We went from, I told you, 400 grand, 4 million, 8 million, 15 million. And I'm embarrassed to say it today. I didn't think it would ever stop. And one of my friends, I joined this organization, Entrepreneurs Organization. So, you know, you get seven or eight people who are also entrepreneurs and you coach each other. And I remember I said to him, I said, yeah, I didn't think it ever stopped. He goes, why would you think that? I'm like, I don't know. I just thought it. But we went from 15 million. The next year was 12, and it was kind of depressing. Then we went to 6 million. And it was like, wow. Oh my gosh. And I remember talking to, and we had to lay off a dozen people. It was the worst day ever. And I remember talking to one of my friends, and he's like, hey, you know, how's your company doing? He's like, how big are you guys? I said, $6 million in revenue. He's like, oh my gosh, that's fantastic. Oh, I can't believe that. You know, he's like over the moon. And, you know, gives you perspective. I said, hey, what would you think if I told you 2 years ago we were 15? He's like, oh, all of a sudden six doesn't sound so good. But we dropped down to six, and then since then we've grown every year. You know, some years more than others.
So, Scott, what happened to go from 15 to six, and what lessons did you learn?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I wouldn't have thought to talk about it. But at the beginning, we really had – you know, two customers, Sanofi Aventis and Pfizer. Between them, they were probably 80% of our revenue. And then we had, you know, half dozen other customers, each we'll call it, you know, 2-4%. One of those companies, Pfizer, lost their biggest drug and they cut way back on marketing. Our business with them went from, you know, wherever it was. They were our biggest customer. We probably went from 10 million down to two, and we just couldn't make it up. So the lesson was, hey, you know, we had a concentration problem. The nice thing about being concentrated is we had higher margins at the time, and operations are easier because, you know, everybody thinks all these drug companies are alike, and they are, but the nuances from company A to B to C to D make our operations, you know, just that much slower and more work involved. So we were very efficient, but then, you know, they make a big adjustment and it falls on us. So now we're working on 80 different projects. Probably the company makes up, you know, 9-10% of our business. So that was the learning, is be more diversified.
Okay. You don't have 80% of your business in two clients.
Yes.
Yeah. I once met a guy who had 100% of his business in one company. I think he was doing like 30 million. So that's, there are lots of horror stories like that.
Well, while it lasts, it's great. But, you know, if something bad happens, there's no way to recover.
I don't want to sidetrack, but I once met people who bought the members only license, and Walmart was their client, and they were doing $36 million a year, and $30 million was with Walmart, and Walmart stopped carrying their brand in one day, and overnight they went from $30 million down to $6
million. Yeah.
It was devastating. So, yes. So once you learn some lessons, right? That's a valuable lesson. Don't have 80% of your business in two clients.
Yep.
And you had a couple of partners who were seasoned, and they coached you. You learned things by them being there. You learned about leadership. You learned about organizational structures and processes. And you and your original partner, I think you said Jeff is his name.
Correct.
So now you and Jeff start becoming these seasoned executives. So I assume at some point the private equity guys start to notice you.
Yeah, so I remember when the first partner came on and he bought in, he's like, hey, you know, we're going to run this thing for 3 years, then we're going to sell it to private equity. And I was like, yeah, whatever. I had no idea what he was really talking about because I had no exposure to that world. But then, you know, maybe 5 years later, he did some research on different investment bankers. And to your point, private equity unsolicited calls you. And it's kind of flattering. Someone calls you, hey, you know, we're a private equity firm. We know enough about your business. You know, we might be interested in, you know, buying part of the company. So you meet with them. And, you know, back in 5-6 years ago, the going rate was, you know, 4-6 times profit or 4-6 times EBITDA. Yeah.
Right.
So we're like, okay, you know, that sounds good. You know, I can sell it today and then I get 5 years worth of money. So that sounds pretty good. And, you know, every year, you know, more and more people. And, you know, we talk to every single person who called us. And, you know, it might be handful of people a year. Well, then when the other two partners leave, you know, we're constantly still getting calls. But now the prices are going up because there's less successful companies. You know, as we're growing, the, you know, the turns go up. So instead of 5 times EBITDA, people are now talking 8-10 times EBITDA.
Wow. Amazing.
So it's,
wow.
So that's what I'm saying. Wow. Like, this is so overpriced, but if anyone's willing to pay that much, we got to talk to them. So somebody calls up and Jeff and I are like, hey, this one sounds like a pretty good fit. Let's see this through, see what happens. So we meet with them. You know, they wine us and dine us. You know, they show us big numbers. And, you know, we're going down the path, and then, you know, it kind of falls apart. It's like, okay, no big deal. You know, we'll go back to work.
Hey, Scott, can you share? Are you comfortable sharing why it was not a match?
Yeah. I guess it was really, we probably weren't ready. So it might have been a good fit, but I'd say number one issue was we really weren't ready. We thought we were, but we weren't. We probably thought, hey, we still got a lot of growth left here. We're on this big upswing, and we're just not ready to sell yet. And also, when private equity buys, makes investments, you can be the first company, and then they'll buy a second and a third company and merge it together, or you can be the second or the third company. So we did enough work today to be first because we want to, you know, ride this thing through the biggest amount of growth versus if you're fourth in, it's the least amount of growth, but it's the quickest to get the rest of your money. So we're like, hey, we still like working. We see a lot of growth. We want to be first. So it fell apart because we were going to be last in, and we really weren't ready. The second one.
Quick question.
Go ahead.
Were they looking for you to do an earnout? Like, were you going to sit around, stay around for a while?
We were going to stay around. It was, and the way all three of them I'll tell you about is they were going to buy 2/3. So they say, hey, your company's worth X dollars. We'll give you 2/3 of X today. And then you get the last 1/3 when there's another event, financial event, which is typically they're going to sell it to another bigger company. So, you know, it's not exactly an earnout, but go ahead.
Would that mean you're still, you and Jeff would still be working though, correct?
Correct. Still be working full time.
Okay. Okay.
And
that next event could be 12 months or they want to shorten that event as quick as possible.
Correct. The faster it happens.
12 to 36 months. Right.
Yeah.
For them,
the faster
they exit, the better.
The faster they exit, the better their return on investment.
Right.
And in that first one, it would have been less than 12 months. We didn't know it at the time, but in hindsight, it would have been. And then somebody else approaches us, and I thought it was going to happen. It was like, you know, we were, you know, at the altar, and then they're like, hey, we want to change the deal a little. And it was still a fair deal, but the emotion of at the last minute, you're changing the deal. No, thank you. You're unethical. I hate you. Get out of here. That's how I felt. Now, we were obviously professional about it, but we kind of walked away, and I'm glad we did because I'm like, you know, anyone who changes the deal at the last minute, I just had questions. Do I want to be partners with these people for the next 3 years?
Right.
And then, you know, by then we had an investment banker, and they went through a process where they reached out to lots of private equity firms. You know, we speed dated, we give them all presentations. Here's what our company is, you know, meet with 24, the people who are most interested, make offers. We're like, hey, this offer seems like the best fit. Everybody thinks it's whoever offers the most wins, not necessarily. But it's like, hey, who's the best fit? And, you know, they're going to convince us, because basically they're going to say, we're going to give you a lot of money and you guys are going to grow. And I'm thinking, right. Well, I haven't been able to grow to $100 million for the past 13 years. How are we going to all of a sudden grow now if you're not going to do it? Because, you know, I'm not going to all of a sudden become five times smarter than I am today.
Right.
But, you know,
right.
What happens is, and we've already done it, we took on private equity on November 20th. On December 8th, we then purchased another company. And I've already seen is that, you know, a lot of our clients want to meet the people at the other company we bought. A lot of their clients want to meet us. And there's all of a sudden synergy. So it really is 1 + 1 = 3. You know, when we first met with private equity, we're like, hey, this is what we're good at. This is what we're not good at. The company we went and bought is really the exact opposite of us. What we're good at is their weakness. What they're great at is our weakness. So it's, you know, totally, you know, chocolate and peanut butter, right? It's, and right. You know, it's only been 5 weeks and, you know, everyone at the company is so excited. Cause when you meet someone from the other company, you're just like, oh my gosh, everything we don't know, these guys know, and vice versa.
Interesting. Okay. So okay, good. So they gave you a capital infusion, and part of it is for acquisition.
Correct.
Yeah, that's have they put a set amount of acquisitions they'd like to see you do over the next 12 months?
It's really hey, we want to get, you know, we were 18 million. We bought a company that's 9. It's like we're racing to get to 100 million. That's their goal. We want to get to 100 million in revenue. And then they showed us, you know, 10 case studies. We bought this company. Then we had, you know, add on acquisition 1, add on acquisition 2, et cetera. I'd say the norm is 3 to 4, but there's no real time frame on when, just in general. Faster is better. Though, you know, we're merging 2 companies now. It takes a lot of work to merge companies, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, our cultures right. are quite different. And, you know, you got to figure all that stuff out. So if, you know, tomorrow a great company came for sale, I don't think we're ready. You know, maybe in 3-6 months. But so they want to go as fast as possible without risking what we have.
Do you have support for post-integration? Because that's where most acquisitions fall apart post-integration, and they never actually they never realize the intended synergies when they do the acquisition.
Yeah,
do you have
so
support for that?
I feel like we do. Like we're creating a board of directors. And so far we've, you know, there's 3 people from the private equity company, 3 from the operating company, me and my partner, and the guy who was CEO president of the company we bought. And we now have 1 person on the board. And in addition to him being a board member, we're hiring him as a consultant basically to us. And he's really good at acquisition. So, you know, myself, my partner, and now my new partner, the 3 of us and this consultant, get together every Monday, go through a list of, hey, this is what we have to do for systems integration, for culture integration, for sales integration, for marketing integration. And
okay.
He's done it many times. Frankly, when we bought the company, I told you we bought a hospital marketing company in 2015. We were just figuring it out ourselves and made quite a few
right.
mistakes.
Right.
So, a little bit from our learning, but mostly this guy here, the consultant, he's really good at it. So we're learning from many, many people's mistakes and successes.
Okay, good. Lori, did you want to ask anything?
No, I mean, I guess maybe a little bit backwards. So Scott, I guess how, I guess quickly, right? Because we're running out of time. How do you help the companies? Like, what specifically do you do? Because we didn't really get to what regional marketing is or how to solve brand challenges. So I'm a little late in the game on this.
No, that's fine. So I'd say it's really, you know, the more innovative pharmaceutical marketing executives would hire us for, you know, one of these three reasons, or maybe, you know, all three of them. The first is there's variation in their product's performance. So what I mean by that is, you know, imagine you have a drug and, you know, for, let's say, blood pressure, 5% of the blood pressure medicine sold in Atlanta is your drug, but 30% of the blood pressure sold in Minneapolis is your drug. So there's lots of variation in your product's performance. It's very frustrating if you're a brand manager and you really don't understand why. We have a patented mathematical process that figures out what is the biggest driver of performance in every single city in the country to tell you where you can play and where you can win. So that's the first reason they hire us is, you know, frustrated with the variation in their product's performance. Number two is all marketers want to go beyond like one size fits all marketing. But the thought of, you know, doing 50 different marketing plans, one for each state, you know, is scary. What we do is we come up with what we call virtual regions. So it might be that Miami and Kansas City and Santa Fe, New Mexico go into virtual region A. Those three cities, plus we'll call it 25 others, are in virtual region A because they all act alike when it comes to the pharmaceutical market, and we're going to do marketing plan A for them. But Fort Lauderdale, which is only, you know, an hour away from Miami, acts more like Chicago and Dallas. So we can do these local programs, but in a scaled way, go for 25 cities, allow brands to go beyond one size fits all. And then third, you know, you guys have been to a doctor's office and you see some, you know, someone come in and with a suit, a briefcase, a clipboard. That's a pharmaceutical sales rep. And it's really hard for them to engage the doctors. That was pre-COVID. Post-COVID, it's super hard. So these brands are struggling to give their sales reps ways to really break through the clutter. And that's where the relevant comes up, Lori, is, you know, we make your marketing more locally relevant. And the analogy I use, I don't know if you've seen, Coca-Cola has bottles with your name on it. You ever see, you know,
I haven't seen that. That's cool.
Coca-Cola has bottles with your names on it. Budweiser has cans with NFL logos on it. So we'll go with the Budweiser example. So imagine, Lori, I called you up and said, hey, bunch of us are going to watch the game. You want to come? Sure. What should I bring, Scott? I'm like, yeah, just, you know, get some Coors Light or something. Perfect. You go into a liquor store and you see a display of Bud Light New York Giants or Jets, depending on where you live. You said you're on Long Island Jets. There's no way you're buying Coors Light. You're buying the New York Giants version because we made the Budweiser more locally relevant. And we do the same thing with pharmaceutical marketing, do it with NFL teams, but just putting in local information, you know, 22% of the people in this city have high blood pressure. Doctors like, oh, really? I didn't know that. Right here in my own backyard. So those are the three reasons. Variation in product performance. You want to go beyond one size fits all, and you're struggling to engage doctors.
Okay, very cool. And you went from, I mean, one of the hugest Procter & Gamble, right? I almost said PSG, but PG, to essentially, you know, building your own empire.
So, yeah, I remember at one time, I think we were like $10 million. And our smallest client was $10 billion. So,
right.
You know, work at Procter & Gamble and Pfizer, and I'm sure they're both, you know, $50 billion in sales. And all of our customers are that size, you know, 25
right.
billion, 40 billion. So it's a little bit of, you know, David working with Goliath. But I think the fact that we worked at those big companies, we know how to navigate those big companies.
Right. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, I can't thank you enough for being a guest with us and sharing, you know, your story, your experiences, what you do. If you want to tell people, again, how to reach you, if, you know, companies are looking for your services or your entrepreneur group, you know, I mean, if you want to share.
Sure.
Info, that would be great.
If anybody would have a follow-up question, I guess probably LinkedIn would be the best way to reach me. So, you know, Scott Weintraub, Weintraub, I think it was in the invitation, LinkedIn. And if you would type, you know, Relevate Health Group, if there's multiple Scott Weintraubs, or, you know, I think I have in there, you know, Central New Jersey or New York area, but that'd be the easiest way to find me.
Very awesome. Thank you so much, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, well, let me ask you, Scott, before you go, any words of wisdom for someone in your position working in a large company who wants to be an entrepreneur? Not that they'll ever compete with you in your industry, but if they want to do something else, right?
You know, it's really hard to leave because, you know, you have a good salary there. You know, I liked my job, and, you know, you have a whole bunch of bills. So, you know, after a $1,000 plus job to make zero for 3 years is tough. So I'd say it's a combination of, hey, you really got to want it, you know, to give up that 3 years of opportunity. So that would be my, you know, one person once asked me, hey, you know, I'm thinking about starting my own company. And as they talk, I'm like, yeah, based on what you're saying, I don't think you should do it, because you're just doing it because you want to, you know, hopefully make a lot of money. And not everybody does. It's really, hey, I want to do something myself. You know, I want to be my own boss. I want to make my own decisions. I want to really help customers or consumers, whatever it might be. So I'd say if you don't really want to do that, don't do it, because working at Pfizer or Procter & Gamble is a great place to work.
Great advice. Yep. A reality check.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Scott, always good seeing you. Thanks for accepting my invitation to be a guest. I really appreciate the super interview. Great. But you dropped a lot of knowledge.
Well, it was great talking to you again, Ted, and nice meeting you, Laurie. And if I can help in any way in the future, please let me know.
Thank you so much, and likewise.
All right, have a great evening, guys.
You too. Thanks, Ted.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. We'll see you next week, Thursday.